Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel, Alice Bryant, Anna Mateo, and Brian Lynn. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will bring us the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
Are you interested in a visit to the site of the world's worst nuclear power accident? The government of Ukraine hopes so. The country's culture minister is requesting that the United Nations add the Chernobyl disaster area to its list of World Heritage Sites, meaning those of exceptional historic importance. The sites are then recognized as protected places. April 26th will mark the 35th anniversary of the disaster, caused by an explosion of a nuclear reactor. The center was testing its emergency operations system at the time. 31 power plant workers and firefighters died from radiation poisoning immediately after the explosion. Thousands of other people died in the years that followed from cancer and other conditions linked to radiation poisoning. The total number of dead from the disaster is disputed. The nuclear plant is located near the town of Pripyat, about 100 kilometers north of Kiev. Townspeople were ordered to leave to safer areas. All that remains in the area is the nuclear complex itself, damaged buildings, and trees and plants that have grown in and around the wreckage. In 2019, the American television company HBO produced a fictional series based on the nuclear accident. It increased public interest in the disaster. Over 100,000 people visited Chernobyl that year. UNESCO, the United Nations cultural organization, would decide whether to make it a protected area. But first, Ukraine needs to add Chernobyl to a national list of historically important locations. Then it can continue with its UNESCO request. Alexander Kachenko is Ukraine's culture minister. He said, "The importance of Chernobyl lays far beyond Ukraine's borders. UNESCO protection of the site is not just about, in his words, commemoration, but also history and people's rights. Ukraine will have to make repairs to the nuclear site and the nearby town if the site wins UNESCO recognition. UNESCO will not consider adding Chernobyl as a World Heritage Site before 2022. Some other UNESCO heritage sites around the world include Australia's Great Barrier Reef, the Schönbrunn Palace in Austria, China's Great Wall, the old town of Dubrovnik in Croatia, and Ecuador's Galapagos Islands. I'm Dan Friedel.
The Mekong River is Southeast Asia's longest, passing through China, Laos, Thailand, Myanmar, Cambodia, and Vietnam. But dams have changed the path of the river system. Now there are droughts during the rainy season and high water when it should be dry. That has affected the lives of people, including those in northeastern Thailand, where locals depend on the river for food and work. Recently, Rotana Tapwong searched for flecks of gold on the edge of the Mekong River in the northeastern part of Thailand. She said the waterway has been her playground, food supply, and way to earn a living for all of her 64 years. But it is changing at a speed she can hardly believe. When she was younger, the water was so low during dry season that she could walk to the Lao side a few hundred meters away. Now, she said, the water rises in the dry season, so she stays on the Thai side and searches for very small amounts of gold. Upstream dams have destroyed the natural processes of the river. About 60 million people depend on the river for food and survival. Many of the dams were built by China. The land along the river used to provide farmland to the poorest Mekong villagers. But now, when the dams are closed to produce electricity, water levels rise and fall without warning. And the land will not grow much of any food crop. Campaigners say many kinds of fish have disappeared. They say the river downstream now lacks needed sediment. This has sent a shock through the whole river system. A new $2 billion hydroelectric dam, financed by China, is being planned for the town of Sanakam in Laos. It is just 2 kilometers from northern Thailand. Locals fear it will rob the river of nutrients and the sediment that provides nutrients for fish. They say it will be the end of the living river in northern Thailand. The Mekong River Commission is in the process of examining the Sanakam Dam proposal for possible effects on the environment and communities. But such steps are seen by locals as being unserious.
From a conservation area on the Thai side of the river, local researcher Apisit Suntarawirat records the destruction. The conservation area is a few kilometers downstream from the proposed dam. He said the Chinese and Lao dams have ruined the river system. Apisit said nearly 70 kinds of fish have disappeared because of the lack of sediment. But the dams also affect plant species, which help provide food for fish. Dam operators say they have put in place measures to reduce environmental damage, including building a passage for the fish. The structure permits fish to move upstream during mating season. But Apisit said big companies in China, Laos, and Thailand are taking everything and leaving the common people with nothing. Villagers are not getting any benefits from these dams, he said. The only people that gain are the big business people involved in the hydropower.
From a small village home, a network of fishermen defends the river from the hydropower centers. But they stand little chance against the business interests that oppose them. Chaiwat, one of the fishermen, said locals call the Mekong the river of life. All they want, he said, is for it to be returned to them so they can live off of it, even if it is not the same as before. With fish populations greatly reduced, many fishermen have left the waterway for work in rubber fields or factories in the city. Another proposed dam in Pokchom could further hurt the people who still eat, live, and work along its waters. It would be the first dam across the Thai stretch of the Mekong. Fisherman Sutta in Samran has a simple plea to the dam builders. It is time to stop building dams, he says, and return the Mekong River to the people. Please stop, Sutta says. Enough is enough. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
When the coronavirus pandemic began last year, Carolina Tolade Vidal's party business suffered immediately. People canceled parties, and no one was buying piñatas from her business in the American state of Alaska. A piñata is a container usually filled with small treats, like candies, fruits, or gifts. It is hung up at parties or celebrations. A person, likely a child, with eyes covered, would hit a piñata with a stick, and the objects inside would fall to the ground for everyone. Tolade Vidal told Alaska Public Media recently that many of her projects were moved to other dates. Many, she added, were canceled. She had to find new ideas to bring back her business. So Tolade Vidal decided to make large red piñatas shaped like the coronavirus. After she shared an image of her handmade coronavirus piñata on social media, she said the orders started pouring in. She explained why so many people want to beat up a coronavirus-shaped piñata. I think you really smash them and break them and hit them with meaning, she said, because it has been tough for everybody. Rose Constantine, age 8, agrees. She said with her eyes covered, she could not see it. But that did not stop her from beating the heck out of a coronavirus piñata at her birthday party. Tolade Vidal started her piñata business about 4 years ago. One of her daughters wanted a piñata shaped like Cloud Guy, a character from the movie Trolls. She said she could not find one in stores or online. So she said, well, you know, it shouldn't be so hard to make up a piñata. Tolade Vidal grew up in Mexico and spent years creating piñatas with her family. She said, I have a memory of my grandma setting up all the grandchildren and helping her make a couple star piñatas with the 7 points. Kate Consenstein is Rose's mother. She said the coronavirus piñatas were perfect for her daughter's outdoor, socially distanced birthday party. Coronavirus, she said, is the perfect villain for children. Children can understand that this is the thing we want to defeat. There was so much cheering, she said, when it exploded. I'm Ana Mateo.
The U.S. military has chosen 3 companies to develop nuclear thermal propulsion, or NTP, systems to be tested in space by 2025. The goal is to test the space travel technology in cislunar space, the area between Earth and the Moon. The U.S. Department of Energy describes on its website how an NTP system works. It needs a radioactive material such as uranium or another element such as hydrogen in liquid form. The liquid propellant is pumped through a reactor core. This causes uranium atoms to break apart inside the core and release heat. The heat turns the propellant into gas, which expands through an opening to produce thrust. Scientists say NTP engines have far higher energy density and are twice as efficient as rocket engines. The contracts to produce a flight demonstration of NTP technology were awarded by the military's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA. The winning contractors were General Atomics, Blue Origin, and Lockheed Martin. DARPA did not announce how much the contracts were worth. In a recent announcement about the project, DARPA said the area of space, or space domain, will be very important to business, scientific discovery, and national defense. Establishing space domain awareness in cislunar space will require a leap ahead in propulsion technology, the agency said. The agency added that one of the most important abilities of modern military operations is for forces to be able to react quickly to threats on land, at sea, and in the air. However, doing this in space is difficult because current spacecraft designs lack the necessary speed and propellant power. The project is called the Demonstration Rocket for Agile Cislunar Operations, or DRACO. It aims to have a rocket successfully demonstrate a working NTP system above low Earth orbit by 2025. The companies will be working to develop and demonstrate reactor, propulsion, and spacecraft systems. Air Force Major Nathan Greiner is the program manager for DRACO. The NTP technology we seek to develop and demonstrate under the DRACO program aims to be foundational to future operations in space, he said in a statement. DARPA said the first part of the demonstration process is to be carried out in 2 parts, or tracks. This process will last 18 months. The first track will create a design for an NTP reactor and propulsion system. The second will produce an operational system spacecraft concept for demonstration purposes. The early development process will center on risk reduction efforts on the path to reaching the on-orbit demonstration by 2025, DARPA said. The U.S. space agency NASA has long been interested in nuclear propulsion systems to power its spacecraft of the future. But the technology has not yet been demonstrated. NASA has said that in recent years, its engineers have been considering NTP technology to support future missions to the Moon and Mars. NASA is also considering a related technology, nuclear electric. That system uses propellants much more efficiently than chemical rockets, but provides a much lower amount of thrust compared to NTP. NASA says it is working with the Department of Energy on the design and development efforts. NASA said in a statement in February that its main goal with nuclear propulsion would be to greatly reduce the amount of time it takes crews to travel between Earth and Mars. With chemical propulsion, the trip to Mars would take about 7 months. But with an NTP system, it could take 3 to 4 months. This would permit more trips while improving the safety for astronauts in future space travel, NASA officials said. I'm Brian Lynn.
On our national parks journey, we are exploring the oldest national park east of the Mississippi River. Much of the park sits on a rocky island off the coast of Maine, called Mount Desert Island. Here, you will find the tallest mountain on the east coast. You will also find black bears, moose, and more than 300 kinds of birds. This national park also holds unique Native American and European history. It is called Acadia. The 14,000-hectare park is one of the smaller major national parks in the country. Yet Acadia sees almost 3 million visitors every year. They come to experience stunning views and take part in outdoor activities like hiking and biking, and swimming in the crisp blue Atlantic Ocean.
Acadia National Park has had many names throughout history. It was first declared a national monument in 1916. Its name, Sierre des Monts National Monument, was changed by Congress in 1919. It then became known as Lafayette National Park. In 1929, the park became Acadia National Park, from a past name for the area. The name Acadia probably comes from Arcadia, an area of Greece. It is said that an Italian explorer working for the King of France sailed by the area in 1524. The explorer thought that the landscape looked like the Greek area of Arcadia.
Mount Desert Island also got its name from early European explorers. Frenchman Samuel Champlain arrived on the island in 1604. He described the island's tall peaks as bare and rocky. He named the island, in French, Île des Monts Déserts, or Island of Desert Mountains. Today, locals still say the word desert, similar to its French pronunciation, désert. Champlain and his team were not, of course, the first humans on the island. Native Americans were the first to inhabit the area. Shells and other archaeological evidence on the island date back more than 5,000 years. The native Wabanaki people arrived there in boats made from the wood of birch trees. They hunted, fished, collected berries, and harvested clams from the sea. Wabanaki people called the island Pemetic, or sloping land.
This sloping land is home to Cadillac Mountain. It is the highest point along America's eastern coast at 466 meters. The island owes its landscape to ancient glaciers that once covered the area. Cadillac Mountain is known as the first point in the U.S. that is touched by the rising sun each morning. The name of its early inhabitants, the Wabanaki, translates to People of the Dawn. Today, the summit of Cadillac Mountain is often packed with visitors, many of whom arrive in cars and buses. It is one of the major tourist attractions within the park.
Many tourists also visit what may be the most photographed rock in the state. Bubble Rock is a giant boulder. It sits right on the edge of the summit of South Bubble Mountain. It was moved here by powerful ancient glaciers. Bubble Rock looks as though the slightest wind may push it over the mountain's edge. Visitors often take photos of themselves trying to push the huge rock off the mountain. Of course, Bubble Rock does not move. The Bubble Rock Trail winds up South Bubble Mountain. It is one of the most popular hiking trails in the park. But Acadia does offer solitude for visitors hoping to enjoy the quiet of nature. Within the park are more than 200 kilometers of trails. Many lead to stunning views of the rocky main coast. Some take you to pebbled beaches or quiet lakes surrounded by forest.
Many visitors to Acadia spend most of their time exploring Mount Desert Island. But the Skudik Peninsula is equally beautiful. The National Park Service now protects more than 1,300 hectares of land there. Skudik offers secluded beaches and peaceful hiking trails.
In summer months, visitors can take a boat from the town of Bar Harbor on Mount Desert Island to the town of Winter Harbor on Skudik Peninsula. The tiny fishing town is a great place to enjoy Maine lobster in many forms. A few small family-owned restaurants serve classic Maine dishes like lobster soup, lobster rolls, or simple steamed lobster. But wherever visitors explore in Acadia, they will leave wishing they could see more. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.